Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
On show 698, a China EV update with our man Rupert Mitchell from WM Motor. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the show. For Saturday, 15th of February, Martin Lee here. I've been saying that intro for almost 700 shows, just a couple to go. Till the big 700. Well, thank you as always to myev.com for supporting this show, and thank you to our patrons as well. A reminder, I'll read out all the exec producers and above on tomorrow's show on Sunday. But for today, Rupert's back on the podcast. He is the Chief Strategy Officer at WM Motor, and it's a Saturday special interview for today. Former guest is back on. We'll be talking about how coronavirus has affected overall manufacturing in China. What's the current state of the Chinese EV market? How's Tesla entering the Chinese market, shaking things up? And finally, what are Chinese buyers looking for in their electric vehicles? Well, WM Motor sell the EX5 and the EX6. They are very highly connected long-range SUVs, and so we'll be talking about those as well and what's new from the company. Enjoy this Saturday special from earlier this week at a big EV event called Move, and I was fortunate enough to have half an hour with Rupert, and so we found a bar and had a chat, and here it is.
The first time we caught up, it was remote, England to China. This time, I'm delighted to say we're both sitting in a bar. If you can hear the noise in the background, there could be worse places to sit and chat. Rupert, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Martin. Great to see you in person.
Before we get into automotive, the big thing on everyone's mind is coronavirus.
We're not in a bar in Shanghai.
No. It seems to be in the news everywhere. There's the whole thing about misinformation on Twitter. And so from someone who is very familiar with the subject, you know, how are you? Are you all right?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm well quarantined. You know, I think at times like this, the danger is that everyone becomes a sort of semi-professional epidemiologist and no one's prepared to know what they don't know. It's clearly a very infectious virus, but, you know, whilst any loss of life is tragic, it does appear to be a lot less lethal than other strains of SARS or MERS or H1N1 that we've seen in the past. So fingers crossed. I mean, it has sort of ground industry to a halt. You know, factories have been closed in China since the Lunar New Year. And they're just beginning to reopen now. Obviously, that's not going to be the same everywhere. China and also the Chinese auto industry can get back into action, because what's happening there right now isn't just impacting our industry in China. You saw the announcement by FCA last week. The component supply chain, you know, from China to the rest of the world is risking closing factories elsewhere.
Tell us about what it's like in terms of the workers. So, you know, we read these things, but people have been sent home, they're remote working, and that is going to impact more than just cars, right?
The timing was terrible, really, because it happened during the biggest holiday period. I mean, so effectively, Christmas just got cancelled in China. But notwithstanding, you know, some travel being curtailed, millions of people have, you know, starburst around the country back to their homes, and the process going on now is managing those workers as they come back to their place of work life. And it's no different for us. I mean, our factory in Wenzhou, a lot of the workers come from other parts of China, and so all of those workers need to be quarantined in the workers' accommodation before the factory can be box ticked by the government for reopening.
And even, on a personal note, even you have to be quarantined because you're seeing family. So you got into the UK a little while ago, because all these things like travel, we just don't think about the knock-on effects, do we? It's a very disruptive thing.
I mean, it's, you know, everyone I know in Asia has now been working from home or working remotely for a couple of weeks now. As you can imagine, there's a lot of cabin fever around. Well, because the schools are closed as well, so people are home working and homeschooling at the same time.
Okay, look, let's talk about cars. That was interesting to talk about because there's so much online that it's great to talk to someone who knows actually about it. Let's talk about, we spoke a year ago and we talked about WM Motor, and we'll come on to specifically in a moment. A year ago, you said 2019 is going to be a big year of change for the Chinese market. Big disruption coming. Some companies won't be around in a year's time. Well, look, we are 1 year on. How is China looking with the domestic EV market?
Last year, ultimately, the outturn was less than forecast in terms of NEVs sold. It was just under 1.2 million. Forecasts were hoping, the bullish ones were hoping for closer to two. On average, I think people were hoping it would be around 1.5. The impact of the ongoing recession in the Chinese automotive market, you know, had a knock-on impact. The subsidy cuts, though not surprising, also did impact overall sales numbers. My sense is that these are just EV consumers in waiting. Ultimately, this catch-up is going to happen. I think what happened last year was people deferring the decision to buy an EV rather than buying a cheaper ICE car. They just say, I'm not buying a car until the economy is a bit rosier. So
what's the Chinese subsidy situation?
About 3 weeks ago, it was just ahead of Chinese New Year, the government announced that they would continue last year's subsidies through 2020. So right now, I mean, our entry-level EX5, the 400-kilometre range one, attracts the maximum subsidy. So for us, there's just one number to focus on, which is 25,000 RMB, which is, what, £2,700?
And that's money off a car. It's not like a tax thing like in the US.
No, it's money off a car. It's an adjustment to the on-the-road price, and then we as the OEM claim back that 25,000 from the government.
At WM, you are one of the recognisable names, but there's many names that even me as a hardcore EV podcaster wouldn't recognise. What's been the change in the last year in terms of maybe some of those kind of smaller companies that aren't at the scale you're at?
Yeah, I mean, as we were talking about last year, you know, funding dried up for the companies that had not reached scale. So, you know, pretty much any of the companies that are yet to go into production, have models on the road, have manufacturing capabilities, are unlikely to be part of the, you know, the landscape of the future. And I think we've come to that sort of Darwinian sort of crossroads, you know, probably earlier than even I was forecasting, actually.
Tesla get a lot of the headlines for building a factory in a year. That is not an unreasonable thing to do in China, right?
I told you last year they'd get it done. No, I think, I mean, let's talk about Tesla coming into the market. I think it's great news overall, right? It is going to turn the head of consumers. You know, at the end of the day, the Tesla Model 3, even though it's entry level for Tesla, is a premium product in China, right? You know, 328,000 RMB versus our entry level of 139,000 RMB on the road. It's a completely different price point. But their arrival is going to get consumers looking at electric cars, and not everyone can afford a Tesla, but I think that's great news for us.
Yeah, completely. They do a really good job of, with a certain segment of the media, they do a really good job of raising awareness in a way that other companies can't do, just because they've got that kind of aura around them. So it's kind of rising tide when Tesla enters a market. Is that right?
To my mind, I think they do genuinely have a global brand. And I don't consider them as a US car company. And, you know, the Chinese Tesla fanboys are equally enthusiastic as the ones that you see in the West on Twitter.
One of the things when Elon went on stage a few weeks ago was saying, look, I want to build a design hub in China. There's so much culture and history and heritage, and we should be designing cars in this market. And that surprised people as well, because again, people are very focused on the West, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, if you think about it, the ID3 is the electric Golf. They're not going to sell it in North America because the Golf was a niche product in a market where people prefer to buy SUVs and trucks. Similarly, in China, there are form factors. I mean, the classic city SUV, which is the route that we've gone down, is incredibly popular in B2C markets there. But even beyond that, and I can see exactly why he's going down a localized design route, is that Chinese consumers do like products that are designed for them. The factors that float the boat of a Chinese consumer versus other consumers in different countries are very different. So I don't know if you read any of the management consultant reports that float around, but McKinsey does a very good survey on what they call ACES, which is autonomous, connected, electrified and shared. And they've been running a survey for a few years now where they talk to car buyers in China, in Germany, in the UK, in North America. And, you know, the most recent survey was an update to numbers which I thought were already impressive. So last year, their survey said that 40% of Chinese buyers would switch car brands on the basis of connectivity features alone. The numbers that came out last week, that number's 60%. And just by way of comparison, that number's 18% in Germany. Right. So it's horses for courses. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that they're doing some localized design.
You have experience all over the world, describing yourself as an economic migrant back here in the UK, but spending time in China. Culturally, in terms of car buying, what are the differences that you see, you know, when you come back here and you hear people talk about why they want to buy a car? The connected thing is important, clearly, in China. Is that like that? What else is there in the list of do people care where the car is designed, for instance?
No, I mean connected features are really important. You know, there is range anxiety is a completely different thing in China because the use case for the passenger car, as we talked about before, is very much city and suburban because the trains take care of the rest. You know, having said that, there is a baseline in terms of range that will give people comfort. You know, the traditional performance metrics like 0 to 60 acceleration, you're just a way down the list. And there isn't this brand nostalgia that you see in Europe and North America. Yes, there'll be a slightly older buyer segment that still, you know, enjoys the cachet of driving an imported S-Class. You're not finding that amongst the sort of the millennial consumer in China, who is a keen adopter of homegrown technology. And two, you know, going back to this connectivity point, they want the car to be an extension of their online life. And the other thing that's increasingly coming into play is ADAS features that enhance safety. You know, most of the driving that you're doing in China is moving in multi-lane highways at, you know, 50 kilometers an hour, if you're lucky, probably a little bit slower. So features like traffic jam assist and lane change support and automated emergency braking, you know, really enhance your life as a driver.
And what's the last 12 months been like for WM? Because we know the pace of change in China is rapid. What's happened, and what kind of year has it been for you?
2019, we delivered just under 17,000 EX5s. You know, obviously, would have been great if that was a bigger number, but it's very difficult to forecast markets right now. We announced the 520-kilometer range variant of the EX5, which is incorporating NCM811 batteries. Again, in terms of technological development, is a year ahead or more versus where most of the market was forecasting battery tech to get. So that was exciting. Yeah. We launched our second model, the EX6, at the Guangzhou Auto Show in November. This is a larger form factor SUV. Again, two range variants, 400 and 505, so slightly less because it's a bigger car, but using both models are using the same two battery packs. So you've got a 52 kilowatt hour in the lower range version of the EX5 and the EX6, and that's still using the older chemistry, the 523. And then the long range version, which is 520 for the small one, 505 for the big one, you've got a 69 kilowatt hour pack with the 811 cells.
Tell us about the charging in China for those that don't know.
Well, it's completely different. It's a single plug, right? I mean, I kind of don't really understand why life has had to be made so complicated in other markets around the world. You know, even Tesla used the same plug in China. Away from home charging solutions, you've got a combination of the state grid and, you know, a myriad of private charging infrastructure companies. We don't build our own charging infrastructure ourselves at WM Motor. What we've done is we've created a mobility app called Get and Go, which has partnered with State Grid and 12 of these private sector charging infrastructure. Now, I mean, it's analogous to ZapMap here in the UK, but it's also incorporated with our infotainment operating system inside the car. So this service allows you to identify available charging stations in your geography, will direct navigation instructions to the nav system in the car. It will even identify whether or not one of those charging stations is actually available, and you also pay for the charge through the app. So it's really straightforward. Charging stations are literally everywhere.
You know, I do with Apple have my card saved on my iTunes account, and when I download an app, I don't have to get my card out of my pocket. Why aren't EVs and charging apps catching on? I don't mind my credit card details being stored with people. I just want it to be easy.
In China, the whole place is that all payments have gone online. You know, I'm still a little bit old-fashioned. I like to carry a bit of cash in my back pocket. But, you know, the looks that I get when I try and pay for a cup of coffee with cash in Shanghai is sort of, okay, boomer. No, literally everyone uses the payment apps like WeChat Pay and Alipay. And so, you know, the idea of paying to charge your car anything other than electronically is complete anathema.
Okay, I went to Norway a little while ago and got cash out in the taxi, and the guy just looked at me and was like, oh, no. So I know that there are some markets, Sweden as well.
I was in Sweden last weekend, yeah. And... you know, actually, it's a function of listening to your show, I think. Probably I walked past an ATM when I landed at the airport, and I thought, you know what, I'm not gonna want to end up with a whole load of kroner sitting in my wallet forever. I'm gonna see how far I can get through this weekend without needing cash. Of course, I didn't need it at all.
Why is charging so difficult for everyone else?
You've got the genuine sort of greenfield startups that have engaged in the charging world. And then you have got the energy companies that are trying to anticipate the future where retail gas stations aren't part of their business. Then, of course, you've got the OEMs that are involved in certain networks as well. I think there's been a slightly a ham-handed attempt to create moats with charging technology and with charging systems, which is ultimately counterproductive to EV adoption at the end of the day. You know, there is, you know, we've seen examples of OEMs in China that felt that if they want to be the Tesla of China, they need to create a supercharger network like Tesla did. I don't really understand why you would feel the need to do that. You're competing with lower cost of capital companies to build a utility type asset. But the only reason that Tesla built a supercharger network was because no one else was going to do it for them.
So the future of the plug, as it were, is that being discussed? Because we saw articles recently about kind of the Chademo group and coming together and a new faster plug on the horizon for China. Is that being talked about? Is that a thing yet?
It's being discussed, but you know, if you've already got a single standard, right, it's a big step to say, okay, guys, everyone's got to switch. China's already got twice as many charging stations as the rest of the world put together. That's an awful lot of replacement.
The perennial topic of Chinese automakers entering Europe and North America. Let's talk about that. Do Chinese OEMs feel the need to do it, or is it busy enough in China?
The priority has to be China. Right. If you think about the scale, at 22 million units of passenger car sales last year in what was a pretty weak year for the market, that's still 10 million more than the whole of the EU. And it's also already at 5% penetration, and so well down the track towards, you know, that critical inflection point. We think that there will, by 2025, be 5 million BEVs sold in China. So that's a... you know, that's a 5x growth in a pretty short period of time from now. So the big focus is for us and for most of the other players in the market is building brand and building position domestically. But just here in the UK, look how the narrative's shifted in the last few weeks. You know, you're talking about electrifying ride-hailing fleets in London. You're talking about an acceleration of the fossil ban to 2035. You know, let's see if that actually bears out. But the narrative's shifting. The US is marking time. They've got some excitements with people making electric trucks, but at the end of the day, in terms of broad-based EV penetration, you know, that'll be the third shoe to drop. But, you know, certain markets around, and then you know, for us, other markets in Asia as well. I mean, you know, all of the markets of Southeast Asia are starting to take electrification. You know, it's as much about air quality in the big cities as it is around carbon. Now, carbon's obviously important. You know, China has committed to reduce the carbon intensity of its GDP by 60% by 2030, but it's air quality that's the killer, right? It's so visible. NOx and SOx is so visible, and it has a real economic impact. Greenpeace came out with some amazing numbers in terms of air quality-related premature deaths today. The WHO, probably a better source, you know, still a few years ago, estimated that in China there were 1.1 million additional premature deaths in China related to air quality. Now, that's improved dramatically. If you think about Beijing specifically, back in 2013, I think it was, the PM2.5 concentrations in Beijing's air were regularly more than 40 times what is deemed to be safe. Those numbers have fallen by 30% since then. You know, I mean, they're taking this incredibly seriously, but it's a big driver for a lot of markets around the region as well. You know, if you go to places like Bangkok, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, you know, air quality is a big issue. I mean, combination of dense population, humidity, you know, it can get pretty choky.
Are people excited about NEVs? Is there that aspirational thing in China where you really, you're like, you know, if you could afford one, you'd really get one?
It's a mixture of stick and carrot, right? There is definite carrot on the connectivity side, but there's also an element of stick. I mean, you know, ultimately, if you've got the choice of buying an all-electric SUV and a petrol engine SUV, you are not going to buy that petrol engine SUV today because you don't know who you're going to sell that to in 4 years' time. You have no idea. You know, you look at people here in London and, you know, I know people that own, you know, big diesel cars still. They bought it when they thought buying diesel cars was a good idea. But effectively, they won't be able to drive the cars in London by the end of 2021? The same thing's going on, and it's a mixture of these license plate regulations. You know, essentially, people have now realized that when they're thinking about total cost of ownership dynamics, the depreciation curve on an EV actually, when battery quality is surpassing all expectation, the EV curve is flat, right? I think you did something on the podcast the other day about resale values after 1 year. These EVs are holding their value, whereas the, you know, depreciation curve of a fossil car is getting steeper and steeper.
How do people buy their cars in China? Do people finance cars? What's the Chinese culture? How do people buy cars in China?
So the vehicle financing market is miles behind what you see here in the West. PCP doesn't work, doesn't exist. You know, a traditional car loan that you will get from a traditional bank in China looks like a 5-year straight line mortgage, right? If you spend 100 on the car and you fully finance it, you pay 20 per year for 5 years plus interest. So, you know, actually, that's somewhere where, you know, the auto market, you know, would really value some innovation around auto financing. So basically, people are effectively buying for cash. Yes, they are taking out personal loans, right, but there's no additional lubricant around auto financing and no innovation around auto financing the like you see here. Now, I think the market's crying out for financial institutions to get involved in potentially being the owners of the battery packs. as you see in certain cases in Europe. We actually launched a pilot program earlier this year, specifically around the EX6 Plus 400, whereby the user buys the shell of the car, we continue to own the battery pack, and they enter into an energy agreement that includes charging, right? So they enter a monthly arrangement whereby they own the car outright, so it's a cheaper in price for them, but they're effectively leasing the battery. Baked into that is an out-of-home charging up to a sort of fair usage policy. So they'll get 1,500 kilometers a month, $200 US, which includes the lease cost on the battery.
That's really interesting. Where are your buyers based? Big city urban dwellers or what?
It's a big city business. EVs is it. That's where the charging infrastructure concentration is. That's where the license plate restrictions are most punitive, and that's where the middle class professionals, the sort of natural adopters are. It's going to go mainstream and nationwide, but the big focus, China's an enormous place. I think everyone has been educated in the course of the last month in the West that there was a place called Wuhan that has 11 million people living there. There are a whole load more like that, right? When I say big cities, I'm not just talking about the two that you've heard of, Beijing and Shanghai. There are a bunch of what cities are sort of known as, and it's not derogatory at all. They are tiered. You have tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four cities. But the primary target for EVs is tier one and the larger tier two cities for now.
So you're doing what is fantastically hard to do, which is to make lots of bits into a car and actually sell them in really good numbers as well. What's the plan for 2020 and beyond for WM Motor?
Sell more cars. But joking aside, we are planning to launch our first saloon/sedan product at Beijing Auto in April. That would be for a 2021, on the road launch. We are going to bring out a six-seat variant of the EX6, so moving the back bench further back into the trunk of the thing and putting two captain seats in the middle row. And so that'll be launched later this year as well.
Well, look, thank you so much. I've taken up half an hour of your time, but we've had a nice coffee whilst we've done that, and I wish you all the best. And when will you be heading back to China? You're going to take some holiday time while you're over here?
Yeah, well, it's half term next week, I'm going to spend some time with the kids, hopefully get a bit of skiing done, and then head back to Asia after that and hope everything's sorted and quietened down and we're all coronavirus-free by then.
Lovely. All right, Rupert, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Martin. Cheers.
Well, thank you very much for Rupert's time and that insight into the Chinese market. I found it fascinating. Did you? It's one of those things that we don't tend to get reported too much by the EV news, the EV blogs. I try and do as much as I can, but they sold 1.2 million EVs there last year, and that was a letdown. Such a huge market. Always looking to learn more, and that was really interesting. We'll have to get him back on again. Let's not leave it a year next time. Well, question of the week this week is all about EV road trips. I'm thinking of taking a long one, about 1,028 miles from my home to northern Italy, just north of Pisa, to go see friends and family over there. And thinking of taking the Zoe that's got about 160 or 180 mile range on a good day when it's warm. I've never charged in France or Italy. What do I need to know? Those kind of things. I'm just researching it. But what's the longest road trip you've taken in your EV? And if you haven't, and you haven't bought one yet, what's the longest that you would take? Let me know. Email me about anything, anytime. My personal address is hello@evnewsdaily.com, or you can leave a comment on the YouTube show. Well, thank you to my premium partners, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby and Avid Technology. Fourth name to add to the list, very, very soon. And looking forward to talking about that when I can. Well, there are 234 patrons of the podcast that make this show happen. 697 shows in the archive. And thank you for every review that you put on Apple Podcasts. Really helps grow the show. Have a wonderful day. Catch you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.